Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
6:21, we're back. Michael Cohen with producer James Plady. Well, the U.S. Supreme Court today beginning to hear oral arguments in two cases that could challenge juvenile lifer laws across the country and directly impact the 359 juvenile offenders that are serving life without parole right here in Michigan. To talk about this controversial issue, its impact on victims, offenders, and our society, I'm joined by one of only two Michigan juvenile lifers ever freed by commutation, Donnie Logan, who spent 39 years behind bars, and Deb LaBelle, an attorney who represents many of the state's juvenile lifers on behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan. Deb and Donnie, thank you both for joining me this evening.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Donnie, I want to begin with you. Tell me, what was the incident that led to you being sentenced to life without parole as a juvenile, and how old were you at the time?
Well, I was I was 15 years old, you know. It happened in 1970. And it happened in Pontiac, you know. And what led up to it was a little gang going on, and some older people asked me who a certain person was, and I knew the person who he was. They just asked me, who was he, you know? And I told them, they asked me to show who he was, and I showed who they was, and that's how and they ended up shooting him, and I didn't care what happened, you know?
I see. Now, this was an armed robbery then that you weren't directly involved in terms of shooting anybody, but you were pulled into the...
No, what happened was an armed robbery. Somebody was supposed to stuck him up, and he was a witness for one of the gang. He said that one of the gang members supposed to shot him. I mean, stuck him up, and that's what happened. They ended up, because he was testified, it was going to kill him.
I see. Now, Deb, I want to ask you, there are 359 of these juvenile lifers here in Michigan. It's the second highest rate or number in the country, just behind Pennsylvania. That's compared to our Midwest neighbors like Wisconsin, Ohio, where they each have less than 10. Why do we have such a high number of juvenile lifers here in Michigan?
Well, as the Supreme Court mentioned Michigan several times in the arguments today, Michigan has what's called a completely mandatory system. So if you're 14 and above and you're involved in a homicide crime, you automatically get treated as an adult. And if you're convicted, even if it's you didn't commit the homicide, if you're an aider and abettor or involved in the underlying armed robbery or felony, it's an automatic sentence of life without possibility of parole.
Donnie, I want to ask you then, you're sentenced. What was your initial reaction to this life without parole sentence? Did you believe it, or did you think that the sentence would somehow be challenged and overturned?
When I was at that time?
Yeah, when it occurred, exactly.
At that time, didn't understand it, you know, what it mean. The only thing I was saying, ask my attorney, when I supposed to get out, you know, when they did say, not to life. I was asking, when I was supposed to die, how many years did I got to do, 5, 10 years, or what? But I didn't understand what it means.
I see.
You know?
And he told you at the time, you're not getting out. This is...
No, he didn't say that. He didn't say nothing. You know, he just pat you on the back. Don't even worry about it. He'll be back.
You were then taken to were you taken to a juvenile facility at first and then transferred into an adult prison after you turned 18?
No, what they did, they put me in the juvenile home first. I stayed there for couple years, then they sent me. Then they put me in the jail. Then I went to trial.
Now I see. Now, Deb, here in Michigan, is it only first degree murder that has this mandatory life without parole sentence?
It's first degree homicide crime. So anything involving a homicide, whether it be aiding and abetting or felony murder, gets it. And I just want to indicate that. Right now, if you're convicted as an adult, whether you're 14 or not, you go directly to the adult prison.
At 14 years old, I see. Now, some would say the jury then ultimately has the ability to avoid this. They know the consequence for convicting a juvenile. The judges cannot do anything about it once that conviction is in place. Is that right?
Well, the juries don't know. In fact, we've had a number of people who have sat on juries over the years, and it's actually you're not allowed to tell a jury what the sentence will be. So many jurors have contacted us and said, we thought that they would be sentenced as a juvenile, and we're not aware that the sentence was a mandatory life without parole.
Now, Donna, you served 39 years behind bars. In many ways, you grew up in the prison system. At what point did you begin to really understand that you may never be released, and how did you begin to accept that fact?
Well, it was about 5 years later, I was about 22 or 23 years old. I realized that somebody told me that you ain't never getting out, you know. I said, yes, I am, you know. I ain't kill anybody, you know. But I started, you know, going to the law library, you know, wondering what natural life really means. And I found out to me the rest of your life, then you'll never get out.
Was there a point where the helplessness kicked in and you really realized that this is that there's no reversing this decision?
Right. So I had somebody write the judge, and the judge wrote me back and told me that if he could, he'd help me, but he said he can't do nothing about it. No. And that's when it really kicked in.
You know, Deb, I need to ask you, there's so many initiatives now to change our laws in all kinds of ways, medical marijuana and otherwise. Why don't we see any kind of public move to change this mandatory lifer law that you know gets teenagers into prison for life without parole?
Well, I think actually in a couple of years ago, the legislature, the House of Representatives, voted overwhelmingly bipartisan to abolish the life without parole sentence. But the Senate, at that time, the Michigan Senate, refused to put the issue to a vote. And Wayne State University has been doing polling a number of times, and they concluded statewide independent polling that 90% of the citizens of Michigan, both on moral, religious, and economic reasons, were opposed to this sentence for juveniles. But it's, as you may notice, it's somewhat difficult to get issues through the Michigan legislature that might be portrayed as soft on crime. So instead of looking at this as a children's rights issue, a number of legislators have been fearful to address it.
Now, Donnie, once you realized you weren't going to be leaving the prison system anytime soon, did you begin to set up new goals and basically take a new approach to life as a lifelong prisoner?
No, the only thing I would think about, how can I kill myself? You know, I didn't want to spend the rest of my life in prison. You know? I mean, that's the thought you come to your mind, you know, you just want to, ain't no way you can do life in prison. Ain't no way.
Did you attempt to take your own life?
I was scared, but I was thinking about how can I do it the easiest possible way, you know, because I didn't want to spend the rest of my life behind bars. Can't nobody spend any life behind bars the rest of their life.
Okay, we're coming right back. We're going to talk some more about the victims in these cases, whether there is some justification for keeping teens that might be sociopaths behind bars for the rest of their life. I'm talking to Donnie Logan, spent 39 years behind bars. He's one of only two Michigan juvenile lifers to ever be freed by commutation. And Deb LaBelle, attorney for the ACLU of Michigan, works with state juvenile lifers. We're coming right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. And we're back. Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. We're talking about Michigan's juvenile lifer laws. The U.S. Supreme Court today now beginning to hear oral arguments in two cases that could dramatically impact those laws. I'm joined by Donnie Logan. He is one of only two Michigan juvenile lifers ever to be freed by commutation, and Deb LaBelle, an attorney who represents many of the state's juvenile lifers on behalf of the ACLU of Michigan. Well, you know, Deb, I do want to ask you about the victim families. They have lost their loved ones forever. Do you find that they usually support a life with no parole sentence for teens that have killed their loved ones?
Well, you know, last night before the argument in Washington, D.C., there was a strong gathering of family members of the victims. And they spoke with one voice last night, and they said that either through their faith or through their recognition that taking another child's life wouldn't bring back their loved one, that they supported reform. And the reform they supported was an opportunity for a child put in prison to have to be released. Not a guarantee. No one's asking for a guarantee, but that to put a child in an adult prison and tell them there's no hope no matter what you do, no matter how you mature, how you become, how remorseful, how rehabilitated, that there's no hope of your release, that they opposed.
Now, Donnie, were you in touch at any point with the family of the victim in your incident that led you to prison?
They didn't show up for the hearing.
I see. And did they at any point get in touch with you, or did they ever voice an opinion that that they did not want you in prison for life without parole?
No, I never got in touch with them. I was trying to find the address to write them, but I never couldn't find
it. Now, it was October 26th of 2009 when then-Governor Jennifer Granholm did what no governor had ever done before. She commuted your sentence. You became the state's first juvenile lifer ever freed by executive order. How did your case get her attention?
Well, I wrote a lot of letters to her, and also my counselor wrote letters to him, and showed that I was rehabilitated and ready to face society out here.
Well, let's take a moment to talk about the actual case in front of the Supreme Court. What are there are two cases. What are the potential consequences if the Supreme Court rules that these laws are their punishment that's considered over the top?
Well, the court is looking at it from a number of different perspectives. One of the main questions that was asked by many of the justices and that showed their concern was, and they spoke of it, is a system like Michigan, where it's mandatory and no judges nor anyone else can individually consider whether that youth should have a life without parole sentence or perhaps have a chance of hope for release. So the mandatory systems are before the court is one of the questions. And they're also looking at whether there should be any distinction between the actions of the child, whether a child actually committed a homicide or did not commit the homicide but was a aider and abetter.
I see. Donnie, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I do want to ask you then about leaving the prison system. You were there almost 40 years. How did the outside world look to you getting out?
It was real scary. I mean, it was unbelievable. Everything was fast. You know, I still don't see it. You know, I still haven't comprehended, you know, all those years I'm free, you know.
How do
you, I'm scared to come out the house at night.
You're scared. What are you scared of exactly?
Yes, it's just spooky out here.
And in terms of incorporating into society, finding a job, those kinds of things, how is that process for you?
I'm saying it's hard to find a job. First thing, they look at your record. And you had a record. Yeah. So I just went. I went back to college for 6 months for auto mechanic. You know.
I see. Well, it certainly would. It's a challenge for anyone that spent 40 years in the prison system. Deb, let me ask you then: if the Supreme Court makes a ruling against these mandatory juvenile lifer laws, what could that mean? Could the 359 juveniles now serving life in prison with no parole here in Michigan have an opportunity to be released?
Yes, and I do say it's an opportunity. The court, no one believes that the court would make a automatic release, but just the opportunity to present yourself to a judge for resentencing or to a parole board for consideration of release This is something that happens in the vast majority of sentences involving homicides. As you may know, most cases, adults take pleas when they're charged with homicide crimes. And so they go through a hearing or a term of years to see if they're released. And so they have that opportunity. In fact, we just finished a study that showed that adults in general for homicide crimes where they take a plea bargain serve about 12 and a half years actual time. So, you know, we would be asking for the juveniles, and I think the court would require them to have some sort of opportunity, realistic and meaningful opportunity for release after they've grown up.
Donnie, let me ask you, for those who look at this law, they say that our loved ones that have been law-abiding citizens have never hurt anybody. They've been killed by a teenager, and they will never come back. That is forever. And they don't see any problem with putting a teenager in prison for life forever. What would you say to them? I mean, are they not justified to be incredibly angry and to want that kind of justice or retribution?
Right. They got a right to be angry, but they got to realize when being that young, you don't even think what you're doing. Matter of fact, it don't hit you to about 5 years what you really, you know, what you done, you know. I'm still kicking myself in my behind. How did I get myself into this? I would never do nothing like that, you know, if I can do it all over again, you know. It's just one of those, you don't think, you know.
I want to ask you about making it through 40 years in prison. You know, people even that are not in prison are in despair and feel hopeless, might be listening right now. What would you say to them? How do you get through something that is truly hopeless and survive through that?
By faith, believe in God.
So were you a religious man before you went to prison?
I was a hypocrite. I was playing both sides when I was a little kid. You know how you go to church on Sunday, but when I leave the church, I run the street through the weekdays.
Yeah, I see. But you're.
I didn't take it serious.
But that changed. It sounds like that's ultimately what got you through. You're saying kept you from killing yourself.
Right.
Yeah. Deb, one last thing. In terms of these cases, what do you expect the Supreme Court to do here? Do you expect them to actually rule against them? And we have, what, over 40 states in the country that have juvenile lifer laws?
Well, you do have 40 states, but you have, for example, only a handful, 9 states that have a mandatory system like Michigan. And really, there's only about 6 states that have been actually continuing to impose the sentence. Michigan, 40 youth sentenced in the last 4 years, and other states, 38 states, zero or none, or one. I mean, so, you know, states that have discretion and are starting to understand and listen to the medical literature and science and you know, our moral compass have stopped using the sentence to a great degree. So what the court is grappling with really is a handful of states that keep imposing this and impose it a sentence that has no hope. And a number of the justices, I've already read the transcripts of both arguments, a number of the justices speak of that, about what kind of system can we have, you know, how could it be constitutional to put a child in prison for the rest of their life with no hope of release, not even a second chance.
You think they will rule this as cruel and unusual punishment then?
I think that they will make some changes. I think that it was fairly clear that they were concerned and disturbed by being by us being this country that does this to our children.
Deb LaBelle, attorney who represents many of the state's juvenile lifers on behalf of the ACLU of Michigan. And Donnie Logan, he was one of only 2 Michigan juvenile lifers ever freed by commutation. That was by former Governor Jennifer Granholm. Donnie and Deb, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Can I say one thing?
Sure, Donnie, please do.
But But I do hope that all the juveniles get the same chance I got, because you can't be rehabilitated, you know, because you need that second chance. Because we never had a chance to do nothing. We never had driver's license. We never couldn't go. We couldn't do nothing, you know. But I feel that we all should have at least one chance, you know.
Donnie, thank you very much. Deb, also, thanks for joining us.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We will be right back to talk about sobriety. Talk to an author who wrote a very interesting book. He created his own 12 steps. I'll find out why. That's next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.